I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubblegum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello, and welcome back to the All Out of Bubblegum podcast. With me today, I've got Marty.
Hello.
And Brandon.
Hello.
Hello, guys. We are back to cover more ground on our beloved patron saint, Steven Seagal. But first, we got to hit the Steven Seagal news klaxon for the first time ever, I think, because there's been an actual Steven Seagal update in reality.
Uh-oh.
Back there in reality is that it was his birthday 3 days ago. And Jean-Claude Van Damme apparently traveled to Russia and celebrated a birthday with him.
Oh.
They posted on Instagram, and it looks real. It doesn't look like... Well, Jean-Claude Van Damme got really into AI, but this looks like an actual... There's a video and several pictures, and it looks real. Mm. So I guess they made up, because they used to beef hard.
Yeah. Expendables 5. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, Jean-Claude Van Damme did tease some huge news coming. So, Under Siege 3.
Oh, yes.
But now they're Universal Soldiers or some shit.
Oh.
I don't know. I sort of doubt it. But I mean, they both love announcing shit that isn't made. I mean, Above the Law 2... It's been announced like 50 times. Under Siege 3, I think he talked about like 10 years ago. And Triple Impact? Is that what Van Damme keeps saying is going to come?
Oh,
it's going to make a. Or am I confusing that with triplets? Jean-Claude Van Damme has something that he claims to. And also like a sequel that he's like always like, oh yeah, it's coming, and then he posts AI generated posters on his Facebook, and instead he just keeps making some French action comedies, it seems, which were the only people paying him nowadays. But yeah, that's the biggest Seagal update in a while. I also know his documentary aired on Russian television, but it's not been made available anywhere else, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
A documentary?
Well, we would watch it if we could. He's in it, talking about shit.
But what's it about?
Russia.
The great land of Russia, where Russians go to die.
It's like a 40-minute made-for-TV documentary, I think, or some shit. It's called... we gotta go. It's not listed on their acting credits. In the Name of Justice.
Oh, God.
TV movie. 32-minute documentary. But, and he's in it as himself, and he narrates. But in the version that went on Russian television, he's, of course, dubbed. So I could only find some guy who said, like, oh, yeah, I saw it, but it's... Oh, no, okay, apparently you can watch.
Oh.
It's right here. But it's... Oh, I'm watching it right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm watching it right now, but it's dubbed to Russian, so... It's actually quite easy to find, it turns out. You can go to IMDb, and there's a button, and you can click it, and you can watch it. But it's in Russian with no subtitles. And Steven Seagal is dubbed into Russian. So, someone release a version without that dub track, and we're gonna watch it.
Ready to learn more about that beautiful country.
Do they try to imitate Steven Seagal's voice? Like, does the narrator whisper and say, a lot? Or is this like...
No. If you've ever seen a Russian dub, they don't even try to do different voices for different characters. It's just one guy. And he will read the text that's on screen. and he will do all the voices, but he will do zero differentiation between the voices.
So exactly like Steven Seagal.
Yeah, but for every character.
Oh.
So it is like Steven Seagal.
It's very annoying when you can only find a old, like some sort of DTV movie from the 90s, and it's only on like a Russian streaming site, and it's dubbed, and you're like, oh, fuck. I'm not going to watch it then. Still trying to find an undubbed copy of one Lauren Avedon movie.
Ooh.
With our favorite action hero, Steven Dejar.
Oh.
We all remember and love from Final Goal?
Yeah,
that was called. Final
Goal. A movie I enjoyed.
Yeah. He did a movie with Lauren Avedon that's only available in the Russian dubbed VHS rip.
Oh.
Unfortunately. Anyway, yeah, let's hit up that Steven Seagal intro to get to these movies.
I'm going to take you to the bank, Senator Trent. To the blood bank.
I will snatch every motherfucker birthday.
What do you mean, we want one?
I'm going to fuck you up ugly.
Uh-huh.
Then I get into a good pussy.
It's like a monkey trying to fuck a football now, really.
I was not born on a fucking turnip truck, man.
Do you feel me? You can't stand to be near me. Hell, I come from a different place. My philosophy's from outer space.
Can I laugh in your face?
All right. First on the docket today, we've got Under Siege 2, Dark Territory. We're back for more of that Casey Ryback goodness. And as we talked about last time, this obviously is the movie that he had to do in order to get to make On Deadly Ground, in order to at least direct On Deadly Ground. And this movie is it's actually based on a spec script that Matt Reeves, Planet of the Apes sequels and the Batman director,
mm-hmm.
wrote when he was in college.
Oh.
He was like 18 years old and he wrote this back when spec script was a huge deal, and then the spec script market crashed before he could sell it. So he still was able to sell it to Warner Brothers, but not at the rate that the insane spec script market of the early 90s had led him to believe he could.
Yeah, but he turned out all right.
He landed on his feet, I guess. I don't know what he did in like the years between selling this and Cloverfield, that decade. Probably did some stuff. But he'd written this as, I think he said he envisioned it as sort of like a Die Hard, which I mean, they gave it to a Die Hard knockoff. But yeah, there's also the myth around how this script, of course, I believe it is a myth, because if he sold it to Warner Brothers, he would have needed to sell it to Fox for this to be true. Is that when Steven Seagal wanted to do On Deadly Ground, they were like, okay, but you got to do a sequel to Under Siege. And he said, yeah, okay. And then they were like, oh shit, we don't have a script for Under Siege 2. So they started they were like, okay, we got to grab a script from somewhere else. And then the script relay began. So the script that was supposed to be a Speed 2 was this. And they took that Speed 2 script to Under Siege 2. And then they took what was supposed to be the Die Hard 3 script and made that the Speed 2 script, which was supposed to be about John McClane going on a second honeymoon on a cruise ship. And then, I know, I forgot how does it go. Where does the
Lethal Weapon?
Die Hard 3 script go? Yeah, maybe Lethal Weapon? Like, was that supposed to be Lethal Weapon 4 then?
3 or 4.
When is that? No, because Die Hard, Lethal Weapon 3 is like 93, I think. So that would be before any of this happened. Let's see if we can find the speed. What is this? Is there, do they have any? No, we're just pretending this. How? Okay, here we go. Is anyone actually saying this now? Because there is another movie. There's a third movie too. No. I can't find it now. I shouldn't have started this anecdote without looking into it first or remembering it properly. Great start, guys.
Yeah, he's back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I don't know, in 40 minutes I'm going to remember what that movie was and I'm going to tell you guys, interrupt it.
Look forward to it.
But yeah. This time we got Steven Seagal is now he Casey Rabach now runs a restaurant in well they don't really say but his sous chef I guess was like oh Casey oh it's not as good when you're not here and, you gotta come back the patrons come here for you and not for me
yeah
I can run the kitchen yeah but you can't cook.
Now, why did you hire him?
Yeah.
It's great. I don't want to spoil the funniest moment of the movie, but it's great that this movie is all about telling us how cool Ryback is and how good he is in the kitchen. And then when we see him in the kitchen, he bakes a cake in the microwave.
All the other chefs are like looking at him like, oh yeah, this is really deep. Yeah, this is good.
He's
shit
genius.
Right here. Yeah. He's like mixing like the most basic cake batter imaginable.
Yeah. And puts it in a microwave for 15 minutes. Oh, that's a great chef right there.
Yeah.
Casey Ryback would be huge on TikTok with his cooking hands.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Today I'm here to show you how to make a cake in a microwave.
Yeah, he'd be hot shit right there.
Yeah.
I believe that chef is played by Royce D. Applegate, who we remember from Gettysburg, right? I didn't think so.
Yeah. No. Nope.
Okay. Well, he was in Gettysburg, so that's a supporting role.
All right. Yeah, and so this one is directed by Jeff Murphy. We're back to Steven Seagal has now said no more director or. He's an Australian guy.
New Zealand, I think.
New Zealand. Sorry, I thought his most famous movie I think is The Quiet Earth. I think is that from New Zealand? I thought that was Australian. I'm sorry to the nation of New Zealand. you should get yourself a funny accent that's distinguishable enough from the other funny accent. And I will stop making this mistake. Unfortunately, your funny accent just sounds the same as the other one. But yeah, he'd already done Young Guns 2 and Free Jack, I think. So he'd built up a bit of a, I don't know, like a workman, decent workman reputation for the studio. Brought on to do this. Just slightly more of a director than what's going to come for Steven Seagal, because he's just going to sort of like try to get no names forever after this, I think. And then, yeah, he also went out to do Fortress 2, and he was, he did second unit on all the, under the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh.
They don't give you Oscars for second unit, though, Jeff. So, you played yourself.
Good work, though.
Yeah, I suppose. And he called. He did not enjoy the process of making this movie. He called it a dreary process with very highly contentious at the time. Lots of arguments and stuff. Mm. So your typical Steven Seagal experience. Yeah, and I also believe this is the first film where Steven Seagal's weight started to become a proper issue. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the first film where he wears a girdle, I believe. He had to wear a girdle to hide his bulging physique.
I thought you were going to say it's the first movie became an issue because the train wouldn't move.
No, it's just, you know, they... I think the failure of On Deadly Ground really spurred him on to his his eating.
Comfort eating.
Yeah, sure. And then in this movie, he's taking a train. He's not on a boat. I'm gonna say trains, train rules. More action movies set on trains, please.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he is bringing his niece, played by Katherine Heigl, to her father's funeral. Unsure why her father's being her, she is in one city and her father's being buried in another, and how she ended up being in the same city as Steven Seagal. But that's how things go.
Well, it might be a military cemetery he's being buried in, so it might be a different city, but I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, that's maybe might be logical. I never considered that.
You never considered logic in a Steven Seagal movie?
Never crossed my mind.
Yeah.
We have Katherine Heigl, who hates her own career, I think.
Probably hates Steven Seagal.
Well, something
after she
maybe Steven Seagal's
hitting on her in this film while the making it. Well, after it was filmed, she's only 16, according to Wikipedia. At least he was hitting on her, and she said, "Aren't you a little old to be hitting on me?" And he said, "Oh, I have girlfriends who are just as young as you." So it's kind of a creepy moment for Steven Seagal.
Yeah, also the worst thing to say in that moment. I'm too young for you. You're a pedophile if you hit on me. Well, actually, my girlfriends are as young as you, so...
Oh, Steven Seagal. What a character.
She sure is something. He sure is something.
Okay.
I don't know enough about Katherine Heigl. I only know she was... She had a hit TV show and she won an Emmy, and then she was like, "I hate being on this show, kill me off. I want a movie career." And then the only movie she was ever in that made any money, that's the one she hates. So she's like, "No, fuck this, I'm not doing this." And because the only movie she was ever in that was a hit was like Knocked Up, and she hates Knocked Up. So she's just like, "No, I only want to do the shitty ones. I'm going to do The Killers and One for the Money, that's the hits." And then, yeah. No, she's, I don't know. She can come back for Under Siege 3. Maybe it can be a comeback vehicle for her, too.
Oh, I'd enjoy that.
Or a Passing of the Torch movie.
Oh.
the fans are going to love that. That's going to go real, real smooth. The internet's going to love it when they announce Under Siege 3 starring Katherine Heigl. And it's going to be like, yay, we love it. We love this idea.
Katherine Heigl and Morris Chestnut are back.
What's Morris Chestnut up to now? What a name.
Yeah,
so they got to take the train to, I don't even remember where.
Isn't it LA? Like
8 hours from wherever.
Isn't Denver to LA?
Cross country?
I can't remember.
Denver to LA.
Something like that.
Well, I don't know. I trust you on this. I just, when they say American city names, I just blank.
I don't blame you.
I don't know if that's true. Morris Chestnut is now starring in a...
Watson? Is that it?
In a, a medical show based on John Watson. Because what's this, like some kind of House spinoff? Because they already did House, which is Sherlock Holmes as a doctor. And they're like, well, what if we did John Watson as a doctor, but we didn't include Sherlock Holmes? Oh, yeah, really cool idea.
Everybody's favorite character from Sherlock Holmes. Watson.
They just made Black House and then called it Watson. This is... there's so much... garbage on television. Was that my favorite was when they rebooted What's the wheelchair cop name? It's
Raymond. Is it Ironside? Ironsides? Yeah.
Ironside, yes. But then they made sexy Ironside. Because that was like Raymond Massey, who's like the most unsexy man that ever lived. And then they're like, no, we're doing it again, but he's got to be sexy now. Everyone got to be sexy now. We can't have character actors anymore. Wait, no, Raymond Massey. No?
John Brown?
No. Raymond Massey, he's the guy that played like Abe Lincoln in Illinois. That's a whole... This guy, who's the guy who plays the killer in Rear Window?
Oh,
That's the guy who played Ironside. Oh,
who is that?
Raymond Burr.
That's it.
Mm.
That's him. He, very unsexy man. But yeah, we're not allowed to have character actors anymore, so now Ironside gotta be sexy. I can't wait for sexy Columbo. Columbo was sexy always. I mean, they did Matlock, but they didn't make Matlock sexy. They cast Kathy Bates.
Oh, thank God.
Mm.
But she's actually fitting for that role, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, Kathy Bates is great. And, I mean, the problem with that Matlock is they made Prestige Matlock. Matlock's like, you're supposed to watch that when you're off from school, sick. It airs at, like, noon, and now it's, like, Prestige television Matlock. The daytime television. Can't wait for what's it called? Prescription Murder to come back in a
Diagnosis Murder. Time.
Diagnosis Murder. That sounds better. Prescription Murder is like that's the where they give serial killers permission to kill.
Yeah.
that's a show about Jack Kevorkian, I think. It's Prescription Murder. Each week he meets a new patient and then he kills them at the end. That's a sitcom.
Oh, okay.
Anything you got, anyway. He can cure it. Yeah, speaking of character actors, Under Siege 2.
Yeah. Yeah, because we just loaded with it. We got, they're going to hijack this train to control a satellite. And then make it impossible to track them because the train is moving and the government's not going to be able to think of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also moving through dark territory.
Mm. Yes, Denver, the darkest of territories.
I'm sure that's what my fellow people from my town think because they have legal marijuana there. They're like, this is dark territory.
Oh, what do they think of the Netherlands? Jesus.
Oh, no. It's darker territory.
It's Schwarze Piet territory.
Yeah,
because we got Eric Bogosian up in here.
Oh, yeah.
The Goat. He playing the villain. And he's mostly a New York theater kind of guy. Talk Radio was... Oliver Stone's Talk Radio is like one of his bigger movies because then it's based on an off-Broadway play that he originated it. So, and it's just him basically playing a shock jockey for the whole movie. So,
yeah,
certainly lets him be all over the place.
Yeah, I didn't realize this until like right before we started recording, but I actually own a nonfiction book by Eric Bogosian called Operation Nemesis about the aftermath of the Armenian genocide. I was just looking up him just right before we started and like, oh, he wrote that book? I haven't read it yet, but he wrote a book about the aftermath of that genocide during World War I. Okay, it checks out. All right.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose he is of Armenian descent. Makes sense for him.
Yeah.
He's got a look.
Yeah, I think he sort of looks like Paul Reiser from Aliens on steroids. Not like steroids because he's so muscular, but it's just like an exaggerated, over-the-top version of that character.
I can buy that.
Yeah. He's also in like Larry Cohen special effects. And Yeah, I mean, most recently, people remember him from Uncut Gems, playing, I think it was Adam Sandler's brother-in-law or something.
I haven't seen
it. He's the guy that Adam Sandler owes money to, but he's also slightly sympathetic to it. He only wants to hurt him and get his money back. He doesn't want things to go escalate. But he was in that, and of course, he was in Miami Vice.
Oh,
there was one episode of Miami Vice back in 1985. I don't think I watched that episode. It's called Milk Run. Anyway, he's incredible in this. He is having so much fun, and unlike, I would say, Tommy Lee Jones, no part of Eric Bogosian feels that Under Siege is beneath him. He is he's just having the time of his life chewing scenery here.
Oh yeah. Well, he's surrounded.
Oh, no, go ahead.
He's surrounded by guys which just look menacing as hell. You got Everett McGill, Peter Green, Patrick Kilpatrick, Jonathan Banks. So you got to do something if you're a nerdy-looking dude. Mm-hmm. You got to go all in.
Yeah, it's got a lot of these. And most of them don't even have names. They're just like Mercenary 1, Mercenary 2, Mercenary 3. Only really Everett McGill gets a name. I guess he's the Gary Busey character of this. There's no double crossing anything.
Yeah. Everett McGill looks like the buff Mike Pence in this. He's going to talk to his wife and say, "Mother, I'm going to go hijack a train." That's what it reminded me of, at least.
Yeah, it's also just weird. I guess he's coming off doing he's an actor who doesn't. Maybe he's also a theater guy. He doesn't do a lot of stuff. He mostly just shows. He does David Lynch stuff, and then sometimes he bothers showing up for other things. So this is he's coming into this right after Twin Peaks, and it's just so weird where he plays this super warm character, and it's oh no, he just takes and then he just Twin Peaks, and it takes 4 years off acting, and then turns up in Under Siege 2. I don't really know what he's doing in between, because. I'm guessing he's a character guy, because it's the same thing later. He just stopped acting 1999, and then until they made more Twin Peaks, he came back for that. It's nobody knew what he was doing for 2 decades. And I'm oh yeah, David Lynch said come back, so I'm back.
I mostly know him from People on the Stairs, Wes Craven movie. And he's probably more unhinged in that one than Under Siege 2.
Yeah, and talking about gimp suits, we got Peter Green from Pulp Fiction, isn't it? It's one of the other mercenaries. Just a guy with a creepy face. Probably a nice guy, but his face. he's got a face for playing bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
That's... And he's going to show up later, too, in some other Steven Seagal movies. I'll tell you that. I know that for sure, because I watched him. And he was in it. Travis Dane, this computer genius, who's faked his own death, and he takes over this train with his mercenaries, and they set up all their little satellites, and they take over this tectonic weapon, which is a secret military satellite called Gracer 1, which he made, and it creates earthquakes is what it does, so it can hit targets that are hidden underground. It's never fully explained, and anytime they use it, they just show a satellite image.
Yeah, it looks like something out of a Nintendo 64 game. Special effects are not great here. But it can create earthquakes in midair.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Which I would love if we could have seen that. Like, show us that plane exploding midair or whatever. That's where I feel like you really feel the budget was cut back here, is that you don't get to see any of the things they do. Maybe it was the same in the first one. Did they bomb anything in the first one? Or just pretend to bomb anything? I want to see stuff blow up. Show me the plane blowing up.
Which each passenger individually.
We do see some of the damage it does, and it's just a unused shot from Undeadly Ground. The factory in China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks an awful lot like an oil rig, for sure.
If only this came out after executive decision, they would have had a unused shot of a plane they could have put in. Yeah, so they take over this train.
Automobile.
Plane takeovers. that's the plot for the third one.
Oh man, the fourth one better be set on a bike.
All 12 of them on a bike. That'd be great.
Yeah, and they're just running their operation from here, and just being like, "Oh, just send us money in Switzerland, and we're gonna, we'll blow up whatever you want." And their ultimate plan is they're gonna blow up. What is it, like a nuclear weapon storage under DC?
I think it's a nuclear reactor reactor underneath the Pentagon. I think that's what they said.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what they're...
Which does not sound like a good plan, because the destruction caused by destroying the entire eastern seaboard of the United States would cause so much destruction and economic downturn that your $1 billion would be worth nothing at the end of the day.
That's true. Maybe. Yeah, and they're just going to fly off to Switzerland, I guess, then. The end. It's their plan.
Damn Swiss.
Just assumingly not with the helicopter that's coming to pick them up, but... It's never elaborated on anymore, but... yeah, that's their plan. Then Steven Seagal fucks them up, I guess. Steven Seagal understands something off. He's making a cake, then he makes a bomb.
Yeah.
And he gets help from a steward played by Morris Chestnut, who tries hitting on Katrin Heigl despite she still being 16, and he definitely not being 16.
You don't know that.
I got a good feeling.
Oh, yeah, okay, so.
What?
He's 9 years older than she is in real life.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, I guess, I guess the specific reason around this train is because so are the two people who have the codes to activate the missile.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that's a plot point. It's not just... they're not on the train just for it being a train, or I don't know, they take these two people at least and try to burn their eyes out, and then they're like, okay, we'll give you the code, and then they have an active satellite. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess then at some point they also kidnap Katrin Heigl because they realize that I don't remember, but I'm just guessing that they know who Casey Ryback is, of course. Mm-hmm. Eric McGill or something is like, oh yeah, he's in the Mercenary Hall of Fame. Whatever.
I watch 24 Kitchen. I know who he is.
He was on... what's the Guy Ferrari show called?
Hell's Kitchen. No, not Hell's Kitchen. Divers, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Yeah. His restaurant was on that.
I'm going to take you to Flavortown. Wait, never mind.
And so Steven Seagal just start killing them, I guess. Mostly what the movie is. He makes a bomb in a cocktail shaker. I guess that's towards the end. but it's kind of brutal. He's just like, oh yeah, I just made a bomb, and he just tosses it into like the bad guy's sort of main station and just burns two guys alive.
Yeah, and I love the Basil Poldori's musical score here. It makes everything everything sounds so damn heroic. Like the scene of Steven Seagal entering a bathroom through like a he just enters a bathroom. The Basil Poldori's musical score is just like da 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 da, like this like heroic like music. It's like, yeah, you enter that bathroom, Steven Seagal. It's so good. And like the opening scene where you see like the space shuttle take off and like the music is soaring and sweeping. And for a while, I thought it was gonna be Steven Seagal in outer space. I mean, see him floating around and all his 800 pounds of belly fat jiggling in zero gravity, but did not happen yet.
Steven Seagal's Moonraker. We're still waiting for it.
Yes, please give us that.
Yeah, like bringing Basil with him from Undeadly Ground. Great touch, Steven. Great touch. Mm-hmm. Really good score.
Yeah.
At some point, Steven Seagal falls off the train, and then he races. Well, then the whole train stops, and there's a bit of an action sequence, and throws some people off a mountain. But then he has to race back to it with a car.
Yeah, that's just there for some reason.
Well, yeah, luckily they stopped the train at just the place where there was a car.
Yeah, I mean, this is the track. This is the United States. There are trucks everywhere that you just drive, so that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess that does happen after, because they steal the disc when he makes the firebomb. Then he also just doses the stairs with liquor and lights it up. Shoots a guy with a fucking flare.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So much carnage. That's so enjoyable. There's a guy that gets melted by like the front of a train. He just gets sucked under. There's a guy who gets shot in the face by a submachine gun. You see like him turn towards the camera with like three or four bullet holes in his face. There's a few good headshots that splatter blood all over the place. It's a nice movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, even Steven Seagal takes a little bit of damage in this one. He gets shot in the shoulder.
You think that's getting shot?
It's not a significant wound.
He doesn't bleed at all from it.
No. It doesn't affect him one single bit. Only thing is that he briefly falls down and they think he died. And I guess, like, no, he... Bullet didn't even, he probably grazed his jacket.
Yeah, he just continues hulking around like he's Nosferatu the whole time through the train. He's like 12 feet tall and like rubbing the top of the ceiling of the train and just breaking people's wrists in games with patty cake. This is in my book, this is back to back with the first one.
Yeah, Everett McGill does the whole stupid like, oh, I'm gonna fight you because I'm proving I'm better than you. And oh boy, no.
Not even close.
You get so fucking murdered, my dude. You get murdered harder than Tommy Lee Jones in the first one. And then we get like a train crash. At the end, we get a train crash, which is cool. But then, sort of everything around it, because it's not as good. Because all the miniature work, cool. All the CGI, are they cutting your budget, Steven Seagal? We can tell it's cheap now.
Yeah, the CGI is definitely the major downside to this movie.
Yeah it's a bit lackluster. There's I think, especially when Steven Seagal's on top of the train and he's like looking in. And then it like casts a shadow on the glass, but it, like it's behind him.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what's happening here? Yeah, it's also, was it Jenny McCarthy says she auditioned for the Katherine Heigl part in this, and Steven Seagal made her get undressed at the audition.
That's one. Well, wanted her to.
Maybe, yeah. That's not even... I thought that was like a Me Too story, but she said that in an interview in 1998, so...
It's It was already cool to hate on Steven Seagal back then.
Yeah. And I guess nobody gave a shit because Jenna McCarthy just fucking sucks. Big anti-vax lady.
Yeah.
Married to Donnie Wahlberg now. Terrible actress. Anyway.
Are we going to talk about Eric Bogosian's death a little bit? He gets his fingers chopped off and then turns into a nuclear fireball as the fireball from the train catches up with him.
Yeah, I didn't get it because you see him like on the side of the train track and then suddenly he's able to get to the chopper somehow.
Yeah, you teleport.
Even though he's like... Oh, yeah, also just the amazing scene of Steven Seagal running through the plane. No, the train as it's collapsing. Mm-hmm. And he leaps and reaches the helicopter. It's like, it is the least likely sequence in any Steven Seagal movie.
The one where he runs.
Yeah, and he runs fast and jumps. It's like, I don't believe any of these things.
But it looked cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then Eric Bogosian, yeah, on fire. And Steven Seagal just closes the door and chops his finger off. Well, his finger's left on the floor. It's great.
Yeah.
Of course.
I also love when the hilarious cake baking scene happens. Just before, we've had a scene of Steven Seagal not wanting his little niece to drink alcohol.
Yeah.
But then exactly the scene after, he's like, I'm going to bake her favorite cake. It has lots of cognac in it.
Well, you do bake the cognac out. Just get the flame.
In the microwave in 15 minutes?
That's true. I wonder what... Does he say the name of the cake?
I think he does, but I don't remember.
They should... They got to release the...
Recipe.
The Under Siege cookbook. You can get his recipe for pie from the first one and his cake.
The bouillabaisse.
I would not buy that.
One tablespoon of Gary Busey's phlegm.
It's probably easier to come by than you'd think, but yeah. Just order it off eBay. He's selling it by like the truckloads.
Shit. Yeah, and just when he's stirring the cake also, it just feels like so... He just can't be bothered. He's just barely touching.
And the two guys are looking at him doing it like, oh my God, he's great.
Yeah. Look at how he stirs it. It feels like one of those scenes and just those scenes on like MasterChef when they make Gordon Ramsay cook and everyone has to be like, oh my God, it changed my life watching Gordon Ramsay cook. Oh, I can't believe I'm getting a first row seat to this experience. And that's what those guys are experiencing. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm getting to see Casey Ryback cook up close. People would pay thousands of dollars to do this.
Yeah.
But yeah. Also, Kurtwood Smith is in this. Mm. He plays one of the military guys in the room who's just call Washington. Oh, what are we going to do? Like in the first one. And then some of the guys from the first one turn back up.
Oh yeah, Dale Dye returns.
Nick Mancuso, star of Rapid Fire.
Oh, anyway, they're all back to be like, oh yeah, things are bad, whatever. All this stuff about find the codes and oh, what's he gonna bomb, and you know, it's just situation room scenes, just there to talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, this movie rules. I love it. I think I prefer this to the first one. Always have. I like the train setting a lot more. I love trains. Action movies set on trains rule. I just think it's so much more dynamic that it's set on a train than this fucking boat that just kind of moves along for a bit. I'm sorry, the boat is boring. It's all dark outside. I don't know where anything is. I think it's so much more exciting in this one. I think Bogosian is a blast. No offense to Tommy Lee Jones, he was also a blast, but it feels like he thinks he's a bit above this material because he is, you know, Academy Award nominee Tommy Lee Jones at this point. And Eric Bogosian, he's just a guy who does theater. He's like, oh yeah, I can get to play the bad guy in a blockbuster. Yeah, sign me to fuck up.
Yeah, I put these back to back on like my ranking of all the films that I've seen. I do think the first one is probably just a hair better, just because I prefer the villains. Like, I love cross-dressing Gary Busey and faux rock star Tommy Lee Jones. Not that there's anything wrong with the bad guys here, but this one is neck and neck. I mean, these movies are so good. I mean, it's got that pop blockbuster sheen to it, but at the same time, you still get some of the good Seagalisms in it, like him repeatedly attacking people's crotches and people talking up how great he is and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. Like, I think the score is a lot better for this one.
Oh, yeah.
But also, the first one does have that kind of like, I don't know what the fuck it was, Steven, like a metal workshop in the middle of the boat scene. But it's a scene where Steven Seagal gets to just come in and like drive some guys through a saw and some shit. And it's like, yes, that's the good stuff. And this movie, it's missing the Steven Seagal runs a saw through a guy scene.
That is true.
He only gets to use guns and a made-up bomb and some knives. Mm-hmm. It's not, it doesn't have the like insane over-the-top violence moment.
Yeah, the first one is slightly more violent. Like, it has Steven Seagal ripping a guy's throat out and gouging out Tommy Lee Jones's eyeball. So it's, I mean, but it's close. I mean, they're both pretty similar in terms of carnage, I'd say.
Yeah, I think they're close as well, but I'm gonna agree with Stein that the second one is just slightly better.
Yeah. Fair enough.
The train setting does it.
That is probably more interesting, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
But I prefer the villains from the first one. That's just me.
I mean, they both have great villains.
Yes, yes. No doubt.
Yeah, I mean, no shade on Tommy Lee Jones and Tommy Lee Jones, Gary Busey, great duo, and Eric Bogosian and I was gonna say Bruce McGill. That's not his name. Everett McGill.
Yeah,
Bruce McGill would be incredible, but he's a bit short of that, I think, to pull off a threatening henchman. Yeah.
Well, he would be a good fit for Steven Seagal, though.
Yeah. Also, the one thing I like about the villains in this one is they have a better dynamic, because in Under Siege, you just have over-the-top Tommy Lee Jones and then over-the-top Gary Busey, because Gary Busey does not have a second mode. and in this one, you do get a balance of like very restrained, cool Everett McGill and nutjob Eric Bogosian.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
Which I guess brings us over to our next movie, a movie all of us also just absolutely loved. We're, of course, talking about 2016's End of a Gun. I think we're back making it 3 for 3 Keone Waxman joints back-to-back, I think, here now. Am I right in that? We're just in a Keone Waxman deep hole. Yeah, Contract to Kill, Cartels, End of a Gun. We're getting a break from Keone Waxman for a while after this.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to miss him.
I gotta say, I do too, because I think we're getting up on some real dog shit run. And I mean, they're not the ones we've been watching. They're not great, but I think we're coming up on some truly dire stuff. We got coming up there. Although there is one Fred Olen Ray movie in there, which I'm interested in. Even though, I mean, Fred Olen has done like 200 movies and. At best, 25 of them are good. But yeah, Keone Waxman, he has the ability to make them not completely shit. Like, he's got this down. He knows what he's doing. He knows what Seagal is. He's worked with him too many times. He can work around him. Yeah, they're not fantastic, but they're functional. And No, Keone Waxman's not going to give you like a 1 out of 10 Steven Seagal movie. He's not going to give you like a 7 out of 10 Steven Seagal movie either, but he's going to give you something that's just okay.
But I remember really liking Maximum Conviction.
I mean, there might be some heights. I have, I remember really liking Dangerous Man. And I think Absolution was, like, fine. better than the one the three we watched. Is that what fine means here, I guess? But
yeah.
Oh yeah, we have End of a Gun, which claims Steven Seagal is playing a mall security guard. We never see that, not at all. He's out in the street. That's all he's doing. All we get to know is that he's former DAA.
Yeah, and he tells his cop buddy that he's working undercover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we never see him like hang out at a mall. He's not like driving around like Paul Blart on the
Segway.
The Segway.
Oh man, we need that.
Call it a pogo stick with wheels.
No, and while he's driving around, he just keeps getting voicemail messages from really hot women asking him where he is.
The most realistic scene in the movie. Oh, I can't live without you, Deckard. Oh, come here, you fat boy. Give it to me.
I love that he's called Decker, just like the Tim Heidecker character. That's fun. This is Alberto should have been here today. He would talk the fuck out of Decker. That's like a spoof, Adult Swim spoof series about a web series with spoofing stuff like I guess a Steven Seagal character.
Oh, okay.
And also, we're like totally in Paris and not in Romania.
They just had one French flag. They moved like from location to location in Budapest, Hungary, or something like that.
No, again, I'm pretty sure it's Romania.
Oh, because Romania. We got
Well, we have some co-stars here. Ovidiu Niculescu. It's got to be one of the most Romanian names I've ever heard. Okay. Also, our good friend Florian Piersic Jr. is back.
Oh yeah,
Salazar himself.
Looks like David Harbour, but sounds like Liam Neeson.
With a Romanian accent.
Yeah.
Our favorite Romanian Nepo baby. Did we find out he was a Nepo baby?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a junior there. You don't usually use a junior unless someone knew who your dad was. JFK Jr., Frank Sinatra Jr., Freddie Prinze Jr. Like, those are all the juniors I know about. Yeah, so Steven Seagal's just hanging out in the street, and then some guy is beating up on his girlfriend, played by Jade Ewan, who, if you look at her letterbox, you'd be like, oh, this lady never did anything else. But she was the UK's Eurovision entry in 2009.
Oh.
Yeah.
And she was a member of Sugar Babes.
Yeah, well, sort of at the... Not of the period of Sugar Babes when anyone would remember.
No.
She joined the Sugar Babes, I think, after Eurovision, which seems like a stream downgrade, but she replaced like the final original member of Sugar Babes. Brandon's now like, he has no idea what Sugar Babes is.
I don't know what's going on here, yeah. Well, you have to film UK,
it was a UK girl band.
Oh.
We sort of became famous for replacing all the original members. Like, they just brought in new girls all the time to replace all of them until it eventually collapsed and the original lineup was able to get back the name.
Oh.
And they have some banger songs, though, gotta admit.
They had some big hits, and I remember Round Round. That's the one that I always remember.
About You Now, Red Dress, Push the Button, Freak Like Me.
Someone was really into the Sugar Babes. they had hits all over Europe, including Norway and the Netherlands. So yeah, see, Round Round hit number 2 on the Dutch charts. Norway is not a significant enough market to be listed up here. Oh yeah, they had a lot of hits in the Netherlands.
Oh yeah, they were huge.
Yeah, and of course zero US crossover. they had one hit single that charted at 96th on the top 100. So good job.
Fuck.
Oh. We're too busy listening
you
to,
missed
like,
out, Brendan.
I know. We're too busy listening to, like, grunge and stuff like that during this time period that nobody wants to care about. Actually, this is way after grunge, isn't it? I don't know what's going on.
New metal.
New metal. That is correct. Yes. New metal.
Oh, right, yeah. Grunge. The age of Limp Bizkit.
And Incubus. Remember them?
Yeah, don't make me remember.
Sort of like the I guess Robin Williams is the one that's been up recently because of his biopic movie where he's played by a monkey. But I just...
Robbie.
Robbie? Did I say Robin?
He said Robin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Robbie Williams, yeah. Where he's just a guy who was, like, massive in all of Europe, and then in the U.S., it's, like, zero crossover.
Yeah, I had no clue who this guy is when the movie came out.
Yeah, and here it's like, oh yeah, you could stop someone in the street and they could, if they were of a certain age, and they could name like 15 of his hit singles.
Yeah.
He was.
He also, I don't know if he does these in Norway, but over here he does cat food commercials.
No, I don't think we do not have, I don't remember any cat food commercials.
at the moment, they're on TV now.
Oh, well, I don't really watch enough TV to...
Well, and on YouTube, so...
Well, I can Google that. Guess what's going to be the stinger on this episode? Unrelated Robbie Williams cat food commercial. And then a snippet of Jade Ewan's Eurovision entry. It's my time. Yeah, of course, 2009, Eurovision's, we all remember, because Norway won. Get fucked.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Do you not remember
you
that?
Did?
Yeah, of course we did.
Sorry, man. I was too busy listening to the Sugar Babes to care.
Honestly, I don't know. I can't believe if you must have heard it if you've ever seen Eurovision. It was.
Okay, I haven't. I genuinely try to avoid, like, actively avoid anything to do with the Eurovision contest.
Fair enough. In 2009, I still lived with my mother, and my mother does not actively try to avoid anything relating to Eurovision Song Contest, and it was very... And also, the whole country wasn't really trying to avoid anything with the Eurovisions after we won it. They were quite aggressively embracing it, I would say.
Yeah, because then you get the host the year after, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. The Netherlands were eliminated in the semifinals. Your entry must have been really shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, yeah, the year after they got to host it. That's true. Anyway, that's a long-ass digression for me to talk about. Yeah, and then again, go check out the Sugar Babes. But also only the stuff that Jade Ewan had fuck all to do with.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she's in the parking lot, and she's being beat up by her boyfriend, who has, like, the thickest Romanian accent ever. And then later, the movie tries to convince us that he's from Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
And Steve Skull tries to traffic her. He's like, oh, come with me, girl. I'm going to take you places.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Steve Skull...
I got a plan.
Beats up
come
her
to my apartment
a bit. And then for some reason, shoots him in the fucking face.
Well, he did fire first, but yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, and then Steven Seagal's French cop friend shows up.
He's also very Romanian.
No, I think he is French. He's very French. He's got one of the thickest French accents I've ever heard. And I can't find the actor.
Ovidiu Niculescu?
Is that the guy? Oh, sorry. I thought that was a different guy. No, he's super Romanian. Yeah, my bad. That cop guy is the super Romanian guy. Yeah, yeah. It's the other cop who's possibly played by a real French guy. But he does a decent French accent.
Yeah, good enough.
Good job, Ovidiu. who's spoilers, we're going to meet again in the future.
Ooh.
He's got a part in another Steven Seagal movie.
And also, I like that Steven Seagal, when the cops show up, he gives him his gun. And then later in the interrogation, he says multiple times, hey man, you took my favorite gun.
Yeah, and also very importantly, it's sort of established at the start here, Steven Seagal once took a bullet for this guy, and so now he just, every time Steven Seagal murders someone in the middle of the street, he just kind of cleans it up a bit for him, I guess.
Yeah.
There's no way Steven Seagal took a bullet for, like, anyone. At best, he was, like, nicked in the shoulder.
I mean, he only has to be standing somewhat close by to be in the path of the bullet.
Okay.
Difficult to miss Steven Seagal.
Okay, I gotcha.
His gravity pulls the bullet towards him.
Got his own pull.
Just moves wherever he moves. It's like, oh, my compass is thrown off. What is this?
No, but this interrogation scene is just prime Steven Seagal.
Yeah, it's the scene from the last film, but the roles are flipped. He's being interrogated now. Yeah. And then it's like, I was not born on the back of a turnip truck.
Oh. Yeah, but there's all the stuff about the guy, like, what were you doing here? And he's like, I'm undercover. Part of that is that I don't tell people what I'm doing.
I just,
and some other incomprehensible bullshit.
I just blow my cover all the time by shooting people in the head.
Yeah.
Yes. This leads to the world's most boring heist scene. I thought it was
boring. Well. Yeah, we gotta go back, because then, yeah, Jade Ewan is like, oh yeah, my boyfriend had $2 million in a Jag. Or was it $100 million?
Was it euros or dollars? Did they switch it up throughout the film? I can't remember.
Yeah, because I see that the plot synopsis keeps saying $2 million, but I thought it said one.
No, two.
Two? Okay, it was always two. But she's like, I don't know, she's femme fataling Steven Seagal into... into stealing these money from a, which is in a black Jaguar in a parking garage.
Yeah. No, the impound lot.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It looks like a cheap garage in Romania, but it's actually the Paris impound lot.
Oh, that explains my confusion. I have budgetary confusion issues. Yeah. I can't buy what this movie is trying to sell me. Yeah, and it turns out these money are owned by some guy from Texas called Mr. Vargas. Who, do we even ever see Mr. Vargas?
Not his face, at least.
No,
it's only
his wig.
His wig, and we see Florian Perisic doing bad things for him.
Yeah.
So Florian Perisic then gets sent from Texas to Paris, or from Romania to Romania, some might say.
Isn't he also already in Paris at the start?
Is he? Because I thought it flashes to, he's torturing a guy, and I thought that part was in Texas when he gets the phone call from Mr. Vargas or whatever when he's introduced.
I can't remember.
I thought he was in Texas then. Not great. The movie's not great at establishing these sort of things. So
was that great? Those things, okay.
He has to go over and try to get the money back, and basically very little happens in this movie. I thought it was because that's all there is. Steven Seagal has the money. These guys want the money, and then they just sort of drag that out for like 50 minutes, and then Steven Seagal can shoot everyone.
You summed it up pretty well. It's not a great movie. It's less than 90 minutes long, and yeah, it's just an excuse to have Steven Seagal shoot some people.
Jade Ewan keeps flirting with Steven Seagal. It's like, I'm gonna make you cookies, and he's like, oh, maybe you can make me cookies in the nude. And I think,
I mean, she's a great actress because
yeah,
like, she doesn't vomit while she says this.
it's like immediate, like 1 second after meeting Steven Seagal, she's like so hot for Steven Seagal, but it turns out she is sort of a femme fatale, so she is playing him.
Yeah.
So it makes sense, and then
Yeah.
I think we used this line in the intro. He says, like, now you owe me some good pussy. Which indicates they've already fucked once, but
I think they have.
I'm guessing like she didn't shower or whatever, so that it was like she had real stanky hole. And so it's like, well, next time we gotta do it, you gotta be, because I mean, you know, Steven Seagal eats pussy because he eats everything. He's never turned on anything.
Next time you gotta put some cheese on your pussy.
Need some ice cream, some donuts.
Put some sprinkles on there.
Yeah. Then yeah, sadly she double crosses him, so we never get to see Steven Seagal eat cookies.
Which is very unfortunate.
Yeah. It's kind of bad. I think this movie would have been better if it wasn't a Steven Seagal movie. Like, it suffers under the Steven Seagal-ness of things. Because, like, it's a functional neo-noir script. Like, if somehow there was a version of this where instead of Steven Seagal playing some badass former DEA agent who's undercover in a way we don't even understand how, but he's just some kind of like a looser schlob who gets played by a femme fatale to steal this money. Like, it could work as a neo-noir, but because it's Steven Seagal, he has to be DEA, he's some badass, he's undercover, and of course it has to be some kind of international conspiracy. It can't just be set where it's fucking set. It's got to be some guy from the U.S., who's a drug kingpin, and they got to fly in to do it. And it's like, can't stuff just be set in a fucking city without needing to dial all across the world all the time? Steven Seagal, why you got to do all this international shit? Steven Seagal playing a looser in a neo-noir. That could have been something. But we're never going to get that.
No.
That's just reality.
I mean, Steven Seagal being a loser in a neo-noir? Or?
Yeah.
Steven Seagal never doing.
Oh, okay.
That.
I just meant Steven Seagal being a terrible person in general, but yeah, sure.
Yeah,
because I really think the story here sort of works, except for all the Steven Seagal touches.
Yes. But they are some of the funniest Steven Seagal touches.
That they are. I mean, that's why we watch this, because of the Steven Seagal touches.
Yeah, I love the recurring line of like, the true happiness in life is the friends we kill along the way, or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but it's something terrible like that.
Well, unlike the Steven Seagal touches on Jenny McCarthy and Katherine Heigl, these are the good kind of Steven Seagal touches. Not the ones he has to go to court for every now and then.
Yeah. I also love in the interview scene that he tells the other guy, that was back when you were younger, had a full head of hair and was 50 pounds lighter. Like, dude, he still has all his hair. You have whatever it is that you call whatever you have on your head. And you're fatter than he is.
Just Steven Seagal being a bully as usual.
Filmed that scene in front of a mirror and then
Steven Seagal. Never even noticed. After. He's just delusional. Has like no knowledge of who he is. Like, oh, you're so fat and ugly. I can't stand the sight of you. You human trafficking piece of shit, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I do suppose there is a sort of a sex scene in this between, but they're both mostly clothed. He's always fully clothed, and unlike what is it called, the last one. Fuck.
Oh, Cartels? No, not Cartels.
No, the one where he got to touch a boob.
Yes.
Contract to Kill. Jade Ewan was not desperate enough to
stay. I think somebody went topless. It was either her or a body double, but I think there was a shot in there where we see side boob.
Whoa, now I gotta rewatch it.
It's gotta be a body double. Nobody wants to do that with Steven Seagal.
Well, especially, I mean, again, Jade Ewan has a musical career. She doesn't need to put a boob out to get a role in the Steven Seagal DTV movie. No, I mean, I guess I was gonna say no disrespect, but like, I guess mass disrespect to that lady from Contract to Kill.
What a bimbo!
But that was a body double, though, right?
Also, probably yes. I don't remember. I just remember there was a boob and Steven Seagal grabbed it. Blacked out on everything else.
It's the most realistic scene in a Steven Seagal film.
What, him touching a boob?
Yeah, just groping randomly people. Randomly groping people.
Yeah, this movie thinks it's some sort of Ocean's 11 type movie. With its funky music, split screen uses, and a thrilling heist scene.
But, thrilling heist scene.
A thrilling heist scene of Steven Seagal walking into a garage. And, like, he throws one of the security guards three floors down or something. But then we get a shot of the guy just getting up afterwards.
Yeah, I was sure that guy was dead as hell. Yeah, you hear his neck snap.
Just tosses him off the roof. I was like, well, geez. That's like, oh, no, he's fine. And it was actually Steven Seagal just throwing a stuntman off the roof, probably. The man notoriously has no respect for stuntmen.
He was standing in front of the catering table. Get out of my way.
I need these donuts. I need the cookies.
But no, I was listening to... Well, I was watching the movie and there was something about the score of the soundtrack that reminded me of Dazed and Confused by Led Zeppelin and I'm a Man by Spencer Davis Group. Did you guys have that as well?
There was something that was so familiar about that soundtrack that I couldn't place. You may be right. There's something so familiar about it. I was like, what is this song they're ripping off? But you may be right, yeah.
There's that bass line in there that's very similar to Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, there's something about it that seems so familiar, but I couldn't place it. Yeah, you may be right about this, yeah.
I've got no clue. I'm so dog shit at recognizing music.
It was familiar. But yeah, that was probably the best part of the movie, the music being ripped off from something else. Everything else was pretty god awful, except for the cookie line and maybe the line about the best true happiness in life is the friends we make. And but
the good pussy line,
yeah, that too. So the Seagalisms are not bad.
Oh, when Steven Seagal,
it's not bad.
When Steven Seagal runs after the car, and the first two shots he just fires wildly into the streets and before he starts aiming at the car.
Yeah, this guy would. Prides himself on his trigger discipline is just like randomly shooting pedestrians crossing the road. Yes. Yeah, that's who he is.
Yeah, he's also in it a surprising amount, except for when he has to do walking.
That is true. He's a stunt double to move.
There's genuinely shots when it's just him getting up and walking out the door that are obviously done by his double.
I didn't think it was that noticeable, but yeah.
Oh yeah, they got a good double.
Yeah.
Found a guy that looked just like Steven Seagal from the other side of the street. Yeah, I guess then they just meet up at the end in a warehouse and everyone gets shot and then Steven Seagal's back to driving around Paris and getting phone calls from hot women being like, oh, where are you? Where are you? And then he has some monologue line about like, oh, it turns out the true people... What was it? He has a monologue.
The true happiness in life is like the friends who love us or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. It's some weird shit, as always.
He just gets done like shooting like six people and he's like, the true happiness is the friends who love us.
And that's something okay. about, oh, Dad.
I'll take your word for it.
And that's why you never got to carry a gun or something. He's like, what? The fuck are you talking about, Steven Seagal?
But it might could be an illusion. He straight up fucks up a line and he kept it in the movie. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed this one, actually. Well, really, not really, really, but I found it enjoyable as a terrible Steven Seagal movie.
I thought it was a little too drawn out at times, so I didn't enjoy it. But, I mean, I enjoyed little parts of it, you know, like the cookie line, like I said earlier, but there's just so little here. It's so thin, stretched out so much. And by so much, I mean like 82 minutes, so it's not even a long movie to begin with. That there's nothing here besides Steven Seagal just like yammering about shit no one cares about, and they stretched out to like feature length, and it's just I can't recommend it. But I get why somebody would like it though, because the Seagalism is strong here.
Yeah, I think this for me it's certainly, aside from attrition, it's the one where Steven Seagal feels the most awake in any of these at the bottom at the tail end. Yeah, it's sort of interesting to see him in a slightly more like, I don't know, smaller scale movie kind of, but it can't stay small scale enough. I guess, because it's gotta have all the Seagalisms. It's gotta be a bit more international. He's gotta be an agent of some sort. It's like, if he was actually just like a mall security guard with no background and who's like suddenly stumbles onto an opportunity to get $2 million from some lady he saves, I think that's a much more interesting movie to see Steven Seagal do. But of course not. He's got to be international man of mystery Steven Seagal.
The ladies can't resist.
I guess we got to fit these two into our power rankings at the end here, then. You guys need a refresher yes. of where the things are?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Number one, On Deadly Ground. Two, we got Marked for Death, Out for Justice, Above the Law, Hard to Kill, Under Siege, Killing Salazar, I feel controversially, Attrition, Contract to Kill, Beyond the Law, General Commander, and China Salesman, dead last, no contest. So Under Siege to Dark Territory. I think me and Marty has both been clear above Under Siege 1.
Yes,
and, I'd be fine with that.
I'm guessing Marty's on Under Hard to Kill.
Well, yeah, but also above the law, maybe even.
Above the law. Okay, so you want it above the law, but somehow below Hard to Kill? Because that doesn't add up.
Well, if you look at it like that, this entire list doesn't add up for me. But definitely above Under Siege 1.
Okay, well, above or below, yeah. Hard to Kill. It's the below. Next below. And Brandon, above or below Hard to Kill? Where do you put Hard to Kill?
I'd put it. Oh shit. I'd probably put it below Hard to Kill.
Okay. Well, then I got nothing to say, and it's staying there. It's sixth.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, I want to put it above, but if both of you want to put it below, that's I'm outvoted. I can't. I can only use my boy, that's a tiebreaker if we got Brenton here, and it's a 2-2 draw. But I can't use it on a 2-1.
You know what? I'll change my vote. Go above Hard to Kill.
Above Hard to Kill. Above the law.
Yeah.
Because Marty, you're on above the law, but below Hard to Kill. Okay.
Yeah.
Out for Justice.
Definitely below.
Oh. Got a schism. Well, I might put this above Out for Justice.
It's definitely below for me, too. So
okay.
That's where it's going to stay. It's now in fourth place, somehow, despite...
This is democracy, people.
Yeah. Then we have End of a Gun, which above China Salesman, I think we're all in agreement. Yes. Above General Commander.
Yeah.
Above Beyond the Law.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't see that one, Marty. You got to go back and watch it.
No, I was gonna, but then Richard Norton died, and I was like, I'd rather just watch a bunch of Richard Norton movies.
Fair. and then you got Contract to Kill. For me, it's above Contract to Kill.
Yeah.
But definitely below Attrition for me. That one was bad shit. I love Attrition. I'd put this
between Cartels and Attrition.
I don't understand how you guys don't love Attrition.
I'd put it between Cartels and Attrition as well.
Oh, fuck off. How are you guys hating this much on Attrition?
I can't remember a damn thing about it.
What? He played Ip Man.
the magic doctor Ip Man.
Yeah,
Yeah, I remember the stuff of him healing people, but I don't remember any fight scenes.
He did a massacre, and then he played a blues concert to celebrate it afterwards.
No, oh, that's right. Now my memory's coming back, and almost enjoying the experience, but not quite.
Like, I think in my personal list, Attrition would crack the top 10.
the one with the dance party after the massacre scene.
Oh, no, I looked at my list. It's 11th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, technically, on this power ranking, it's still number 10. Just because we don't have enough movies on there yet.
That's true. My personal ranking has 31 entries, whereas this list has 14. So there, then that's updated. I can tell you what the next Steven Seagal episode is, if I can fucking find it here. Next time on the Steven Seagal end of things, whenever that will be, we are watching Executive Decision and The Perfect Weapon.
I'm guessing Steven Seagal is the perfect weapon here.
I'm guessing not. I think Johnny Messner is the perfect weapon. Oh. I'm predicting we're getting it's going to be a Steven Seagal supporting actor double.
Okay.
I don't think he's the lead in either of those. I think actually he's the villain in The Perfect Weapon, and then in Executive Decision, we know what he is. He's the sort of he's the badass who. Spoilers if for a 30-year-old movie dies.
It's red herring.
Yeah, and next week, I don't know what we're doing. I don't think any of us know what we're doing. I also don't know if we should be saying it, because we're not 100% sure on what order shit are going out in at this point.
But we'll probably do something.
There will be an episode also in the future. So, in the meanwhile, check out the website, check out the Discord, and the Patreon, and some of those, all of that stuff. It's all on alloutofbubblegum.com. One word. Well, don't write the dots. All out of bubblegum is one word. The dots are dots. All right. And then we'll see you next time.
All right. See you then.
Bye for now.
See you then. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Elmo really wants to eat both cookies. But, boy, this is hard. Maybe Elmo can find a way to figure it out. Yeah, that's what Elmo would do. Hey, would you like to share Elmo's cookies?
I love the fuck out of cookies.
He said a bear worth $5. $5.
I've been down so long.
Assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups.